This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. If you're in downtown Chattanooga these days, you'll see flags celebrating Black-owned businesses in the city. The flags are part of Chattanooga Recreates Black Wall Street, a month-long spotlight on those businesses that is also grounded in history, from Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921, to Chattanooga's own past, to Juneteenth, which will be a city holiday for the first time this year. Vanessa Jackson is Community Program Coordinator at the City of Chattanooga's Office of Multicultural Affairs. Vanessa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us more about Chattanooga Recreates Black Wall Street.
Well, Chattanooga Recreates Black Wall Street is an observance to recognize the contributions and the impact of Black business to the City of Chattanooga. We are paying homage to the 1921 Tulsa Massacre and the abundance of wealth and, I guess, community-driven self-sufficiency from the Greenwood community and African-American community in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We're learning a lot about Black Wall Street, even at this time with the 100-year anniversary, through a lot of the documentaries that are being shown right now that talk about what happened during that time when the business community in that small segment of Tulsa was so vibrant that a dollar could circulate within it more than 19 times before it left that small community. It was full of businesses ran and owned by African Americans of all kinds. So a lot of that history has been lost or hampered in terms of that story being told. And so what we want to do is to tell the story, but also give it a Chattanooga spin with relevance to the importance of the Black business economy in Chattanooga, paying tribute to some of the longstanding businesses in Chattanooga, some of the first Black businesses in Chattanooga, and to make the connection between the Chattanooga Black business economy and doing business with the City of Chattanooga and increasing supplier diversity.
And that's why this is a month-long recognition. It's not just looking back or looking to another part of the country. It is about right here, right now, and going forward here in Chattanooga.
Correct. So what we're doing for that month is encouraging people to celebrate Black businesses in our city, to patronize Black businesses in our city. There may be people that maybe don't frequently patronize Black businesses in the City of Chattanooga, but they do exist. And so we want to encourage that by highlighting those businesses. We have in our Office of Multicultural Affairs, in collaboration with several other entities and certainly our purchasing department, put together a list, a directory of Black-owned businesses. The first directory being one that includes businesses that actively do business already with the City of Chattanooga. And that directory includes about 300 and some odd Black businesses from within our city and region that work with the City of Chattanooga already in its procurement processes. Then we're also compiling a list of community businesses, which are just that, businesses that are well-known within the community, businesses that have been recommended to us by those who live in the community, of business owners and entrepreneurial pursuits within the Chattanooga Black business scene, to also include artists, nonprofits, etc. So we're proud that we're going to be presenting both of those lists to the broader community at this time, in addition to encouraging the community to patronize Black businesses. And we're just proud, too, of some of the things that you'll see downtown. We also, in partnership with our community partners at the Downtown Chattanooga Alliance, you will see Juneteenth flags hailing downtown Chattanooga on Market Street. We're going to have some flags in front of the Black businesses in our downtown vicinity. On the June 19th event, which is Juneteenth, we're planning a big event at the Miller Pavilion, which is a socially distanced event, but an event nonetheless where we want people to come and see photos that we'll have available of some early businesses that are Black-owned within the Chattanooga area. We'll also have the NAACP there, and they will be encouraging people to become members and providing other information about Black entrepreneurship. We'll have our partners EPB there, providing information about their supplier diversity efforts in the city as well. And so we are just wanting to open this event up to the entire city to come, walk through the event, take a look at the pictures, observe the flags that are hanging, talk to representatives from the city of Chattanooga so that we can tell you about how to do business with the city of Chattanooga, so that we can tell you more about how to become what we have termed as an MWOBE business, Minority Women Owned Business Enterprise, and how to actually apply for that city certification. That's a stepping stone to national certifications for businesses. We know it's all about relationships. So we like to use this opportunity to build relationships with Black and other minority business, any business owner in the city, in fact, that wants to learn more about what we do to bring about a more diverse economy here in Chattanooga, and certainly our partners as well.
And we should remind people that this Juneteenth is a city holiday, a first.
It is, and we are so proud of that this is the first city holiday for city employees, and that legislation was pushed by a number of city council persons, but sort of headed by Councilwoman Demetrius Coonrod. And so we're happy. Me being a city employee, I'm very happy, but I'm also very happy for the message that it sends throughout our city that, you know, focuses in on the contribution and, you know, the true Freedom Day for African Americans in our country.
And during the event on Juneteenth, your office will screen a PBS documentary film called Boss, The Black Business Experience. Tell us a little more about that and how that connects to everything else we've been talking about here.
Oh, wow. So I think in 2019, we had the opportunity to partner with WTCI in the preview of Boss, The Black Business Experience. And we thought that during this time, Juneteenth, and as we recreate Black Wall Street, will be an excellent opportunity for us to partner with WTCI and PBS to show this movie during our time spent on June 19th at Miller Pavilion. It is a documentary that showcases, I guess, the early origins and impetus of Black business to our local economy. And not only the local economy, but just the evolution of Black businesses so that now they are part of this global economy of business and the power of Black businesses. It also features footage and information pertaining to the Greenwood Massacre event and how that event came to be and what has happened since that event throughout this country in terms of the surges of Black business and the pursuit of how Black business has impacted communities and neighborhoods and philanthropy throughout our world. So we thought that this would be a great opportunity to show this documentary again so that people will have an opportunity to learn more about the importance and the stimulus of Black business to everything we do and to the communities in which we live in. So we're just excited. We're glad to have WTCI as a partner.
And for people who want more information about all the events during this month-long recognition, where can they go online?
If they want more information about the events that are taking place and sponsored by the City of Chattanooga, of course, they can go to www.chattanooga.gov and go to the particular webpage for Multicultural Affairs. But there are a number of other Juneteenth activities that are taking place throughout the month. And we just commend the city and the residents for coming together to sponsor these events. So, you know, I encourage citizens, if they want to learn more, if they're interested in learning more about business or learning more about Juneteenth or even Black Wall Street, to take part of these events.
All right. Vanessa, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Ray.
Juneteenth commemorates African-American emancipation in this country after the Civil War. A week from Saturday, the Bethlehem Center here in Chattanooga will hold its first annual Juneteenth Festival. Reginald F. Smith II is the center's executive director. Reginald, thanks for joining us.
Not a problem. Happy to be here again.
Tell us more about the Juneteenth Festival.
Here at the Bethlehem Center, we decided to do something a little different than what we traditionally do in the summers to kind of kick off a lot of our summer activities. And we are actually having a Juneteenth Festival here at the Bethlehem Center. Of course, Juneteenth is a historic day in American history when the country's last slaves were finally freed in Texas in 1865. So we wanted to kind of commemorate that day and allow for our community to have a good time, similar to what we do during the 4th of July, and have an opportunity to have a festival, feed people, bring out Black-owned businesses and vendors to really show love here in the South Chattanooga area.
And this festival will take place on the actual date, Juneteenth, and it is now recognized as a holiday here in Chattanooga.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And so, yes, it will take place on June 19th, which is, you know, affectionately known as Juneteenth. And yes, it is now, you know, I guess recognized by the city of Chattanooga as a holiday. I know for years, many people have been celebrating it, but it's definitely becoming more prominent around town.
How will this festival commemorate the history, commemorate the legacy, in addition to just providing an opportunity for the community to gather and celebrate?
Well, we're going to have a number of guest speakers who are going to be talking about not only days long gone, but also present day, as well as, you know, city officials and mayors and, you know, county officials as well, coming out talking about, you know, one of the things that are taking place now in the city of Chattanooga, as well as a few special performances. We're going to have a DJ out front talking about, you know, being able to showcase wonderful things that's going on and talking about hour on the hour, the various different businesses that are represented, as well as historical food that people will be able to try out and have a good time and enjoy themselves.
And since the last time we spoke, you have had a lot going on there at the center, even with this pandemic.
Yes, very much so. We kind of positioned ourselves as a place of hope for our community. And of course, with the pandemic, we kind of went away a little bit from our traditional reins of working in the area of education, leadership, and spiritual development to more of a social service focused. We've recently opened a farm. We recognized the connection between healthy living and healthy eating. And we wanted to make sure that during the pandemic, we were actually producing healthy fruits and vegetables if our community wanted them. We've expanded that farm now to literally encompass most of our backyard, as we like to say. And we're producing a lot more fruits and vegetables that are able to be given away to local community organizations that are engaged in serving the homeless now, as well as organizations around town that are engaging in food insecurity like we are. So, yeah, we're bustling at the seams here, and we're still engaged in working with our young people. Our summer program is getting ready to start back up, as well as we finally finished our first wave of doing our virtual learning centers. So we're staying in the good fight.
What have you been hearing from people in the community these past few weeks, these past few months, given where things have gone with this pandemic and the vaccinations and the lifting of mask mandates and so on?
We're hearing a, I guess, optimistic shot of relief, as well as kind of a little bit of uncertainty. The vast majority of our community is ready to get back to life as normal as possible. But at the same time, kind of optimistic because we all know that the pandemic isn't over yet. We've been blessed to, over the course of the last few months, we actually be a vaccination site on the weekends on some days at our local market that we host here. So we've actually seen some pretty good numbers come through to get vaccinated. That is actually giving a little bit of relief to the community, as now we're starting to see more people feel that they can come back out and be a part of the community and be a part of the culture that we're creating around here. People are still optimistic that things are going to get better, but they're, as well as they're still being cautious, as we know that we're not out of the pandemic just yet.
And where can people go online for more information about the festival?
People can go online to our website, to www.thebeth.org, as well as our Facebook page, The Beth Center. And of course, on Instagram, we have a wonderful social media presence there as well.
All right. Reginald, thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment. This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. A Lowcountry boil is a culinary and cultural staple here in the South. Maybe you're thinking of the kind from South Carolina, or the style from Louisiana, or the one that you'll find on Saturday in Dalton at the Creative Arts Guild, starting at 6 p.m. Leanne Martin and Sarah Murray are with the Guild. Leanne, Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Tell us more about what a low country boil is.
Well, a low country boil, and we have the Wikipedia definition that we've given to our teams as they start to prepare their boils and decide exactly what is eligible for the Best of the Boil Award, is typically a seafood in a pot that's boiled with potatoes, sausages, corn, and anything else the chef chooses to throw in. For us, low country boil is a way for us to celebrate food, and also it brings into focus our culinary arts division, our programming, and our education departments.
And when we say low country boil, I am thinking of the low country of South Carolina.
Yes, low country of South Carolina, but the people in Louisiana also are quite proud of their low country boils. And those are two distinct flavors. Some are spicier than others. And so we have the South Carolina boils and we do have the Louisiana ones. They tend to have the crawfish and some other things in them.
So what are you bringing there? Which one or a combination?
We have seven teams that compete and they bring in whichever they choose. These teams are all volunteer. They come as a good spirited cooking competition. And our guests get a sample from each team's boil and vote for that. We have a team of judges made up of the foodies in Dalton and restaurant owners and chefs.
It's a combination of everything. And like I said, our teams do a great job of putting their own spin on it. We've had some boils that have some more tropical flavors, like you might get some pineapple and coconut in some of them. We've had some boils that are pretty traditional, right on the nose. So it just kind of depends on what the teams want to do, but it is a great way to bring everybody together. Here in the South, especially, the low country boil is really about a family gathering. It's about gathering people together. You know, you've seen pictures of dumping a huge pot of stuff out on the table and everyone just partakes. And it's a very community-minded, communal kind of thing. So that's what we like to do as well. And just kind of bring our guild family together to celebrate and to welcome in summer. Like I said, when you look up Southern cuisine, I think low country boils probably would be one of the first ones that you would see, along with, you know, your shrimp and grits and your chicken and waffles and, you know, all those other things. It seems like even if people have not tasted boil before or haven't made it, they've at least heard of it and they're familiar enough with it. It's a great way to try some regional cuisine that truly is, you know, this part of the country. It's kind of a hallmark of this part of the country, and other areas of the country have their seafood stew or their clam bakes and all those other kind of things. But the South, you know, we've got low country boil.
We started our culinary program 3 years ago with the expansion of our building, honestly, and the growth of a kitchen. We had the facility and started cooking classes, culinary classes with Chef Jaycee Joseph, and she's led those for all of our years. And we just come in, have a good time, very informal. We actually had low country boil before that, but now it really made sense and it fell into part of our programming.
And you're holding this after more than a year of the pandemic and people feeling freer to just get out and do things.
That's right. Last year, we did not hold our traditional low country boil. This will be our eighth year. We did have a restaurant that prepared low country boil, and we had people drive through and pick up plates to take home. So we still had our event. It just was not on our grounds. It did not include the music and the sangria and the beer and the dancing and the teams that compete, the rivalries and the good-natured competition with those teams. So we're looking forward to having everybody together under our building for kind of a kickoff to summer party.
The music will be back and the sangria will be back.
Yes,
that's right.
Yes, so our musical guest this year will be the Von Womps. It's actually maybe some familiar names. It's Lou Lynn and Daniel Womp. So they're well known in Chattanooga and in the scene. So they're going to bring some friends and, you know, just some fun cover tunes, stuff you can dance to, stuff you can enjoy listening to. So we're excited about that for sure.
And then where can people go online for more information?
For more information, go to creativeartsguild.org. We have a link there where people can buy tickets and find out more information. Tickets are $30 for adults, $10 for students, and kids 5 and under are free. And I will also say for our kids, we're going to have a little kids meal available because not all kids are as adventurous eaters as a low country boil. So we have some hot dogs and mac and cheese available for the kids in attendance for those who can't eat shellfish.
All right. Sarah, Leanne, thanks so much.
Thank you for having us.
Here in Chattanooga, Obvious Dad is a new theater company that promises bold live performances. Its first season begins a week from Friday with You Got Older by Claire Barron on our campus, the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Blake Harris is the artistic director of Obvious Dad. Blake, thanks for joining us.
Of course.
Tell us more about Obvious Dad.
Obvious Dad is a new theater company in Chattanooga. Several of us involved had a theater company in Chattanooga many years ago called Theater for the New South. And we all went on to grad school or working in different parts of theater and entertainment. And we all ended up back in Chattanooga not too long ago and decided to start collaborating again. And Obvious Dad is really about bringing new and interesting stories, bold stories that are very aesthetically driven to Chattanooga. So we kind of sit somewhere between like what the university is doing theater-wise, what the theater center is doing. We kind of fill a niche that's between those places.
And of course, Obvious Dad has connections to those places and others in the theater community in this area.
Absolutely. Every single person who is a member of Obvious Dad is actually an alum of UTC. Some of us graduated from the theater program. I personally graduated from the Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies program with a minor in theater. But we all came together through our love of more, I guess, experimental theater. And we kind of range from an alumni status, I guess, from I graduated in 2011. And one of our members, Katie Daly, is a current master's student at UTC who graduated from the theater program in 2020. So there's a range there. But yes, we've been working in the community and outside the community for many years.
Give us an example of the types of live bold performances that Obvious Dad is promising to theatergoers here.
With our first show that we're doing, our inaugural show, You Got Older by Claire Barron, this is a piece that has some mature themes in it, and we are taking it in a very aesthetically driven way. So we want to have very clean, articulate visuals in front of the audience. It was important to us to find a show that balanced between celebration of life, but also opened up a space for catharsis in a way of memory for those we have lost in the past year. And so we see theater as a space for making liveness. We want to create something that is unexpected, something that takes risk. Another example would be our second show of the summer, which is The Hairy Ape by Eugene O'Neill, which is from 1922. And it's his oddball of a play because he was one of the masters who brought realism to America. And this is definitely not realism. It is an expressionist play, but we are taking it and adapting that piece to kind of see what these words that O'Neill offers looks like and sounds like through the bodies of people who have been marginalized within the South and even on stages across America. So we want to make sure that we are relevant specifically to the community. What are stories that aren't being told? What are voices that aren't being heard? And how do we say something that actually matters? But also, we really want to have a good time. We want audiences to have that outlet. Being a Chattanooga native, I know some Saturday nights, you're just looking for something to do. This summer, that's what we want to offer. Is it's not only something to do, it's going to be an exciting summer for theater.
How has the pandemic affected the formation and the launch of Obvious Dad?
We probably would not be doing this if it weren't for the pandemic in a strange way. One of the things that brought me back to Chattanooga was before the pandemic, I had talked to the Women, Gender, and Sexuality Studies program at UTC and Dr. Marcia Noe, who is the head of that program. And to mark the 30th anniversary of that program, we did a production called Revolt, She Said Revolt Again by Alice Birch. And a lot of things just kind of clicked and came back into place. That's when we all realized like we're all kind of coalescing around Chattanooga again. And after that, we started conversations about, you know, a theater company and what could we do. But it wasn't, we had started the reading process. We had started just looking at different plays and different aspects. But then the pandemic hit. I actually got a job in Maryland and as a professor in Maryland. And so all thoughts of what we could do were gone. But it was actually over Zoom, Gabby Dixon, who is our connectivity director, they said, why don't we think about doing something this summer? And it was like, oh, not only do we have plenty of time to plan this now, because no one has anything to do right now, but we have the unique opportunity to slow down. That is not something theater affords its artist, is to slow down. It's a long process, but you hit the ground running. So we were able to really plan these things out. I was able to cast most of the shows over Zoom, you know, holding digital auditions. And we started design conversations over Zoom, and we did our readings over Zoom. And I got back to Chattanooga the day before Mother's Day, took that day off, and we started rehearsals the next day. So it was actually the pandemic that allowed us to kind of formulate this, but also be really thoughtful about the stories we're telling and the visuals that we're bringing into play.
And tell us more about where and how you will be staging these performances.
We are in collaboration with the UTC Theater Program and the Performing Arts Program. And we are going to be in the Jim G. Lewis Studio Theater in the Fine Arts Center. Both of our shows will be there. I think audiences will be shocked to see how we utilize the space in completely different ways. We are taking all COVID safety precautions into consideration because we are one of the first local theater groups who are venturing back into live performance, since we were able to start a little earlier.
And also live performance on our campus.
Live performance on our campus and live performance on our campus in the Fine Arts Center, which has been under construction for the past 2 years. I was a guest artist who was contracted to direct the last show that was in the Fine Arts Center, Tartuffe, which I believe that was over 2 years ago. So it feels very full circle in a strange way. So people can find us in the Fine Arts Center. ObviousDad.com is the best place to keep up with us. Our social media as well, ObviousDadChat, C-H-A-T-T. But we just want to ensure audiences that we have thought through all the precautions so that you can come and you don't have to think about those things, and you can think about what you're seeing in front of you. So it's a big celebration for a lot of us to finally get back to live performances, for audiences to be able to step into a physical theater and see this. I'll tell you, it was emotional the first time we got in the rehearsal room. And after, you know, a year and a half of not being able to. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of firsts for the post, well, we're not post-pandemic, but the segue out of the pandemic, it'll be a lot of first for our group and Chattanooga audiences.
And again, where can people go online for more information?
ObviousDad.com. You can find everything there about the shows. I encourage people to sign up for our newsletter, because that is the most efficient way for us to reach you. And we don't spam you. So you'll only get the communication you need from us. And our socials on Facebook and Instagram, ObviousDadChat, C-H-A-T-T. We are on there. We're constantly putting out new, fun, quirkier content for our audiences.
All right, Blake, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Make Music Chattanooga is a day-long celebration of learning and creating music. This year's celebration on Monday, June 21st, will be hosted at all four locations of the Chattanooga Public Library. Mark Anderson will be leading the harmonica workshops. I spoke with him and the library's Chrissy Varnell. Mark, Chrissy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So excited to be here.
Mark, tell us more about Make Music Day.
Make Music Day is a global celebration of music on the solstice annually. It began in France in 1982 as just a celebration of music where everyone could participate, free to everyone, encouraging group participation. And the Chattanooga version began in 2016. It is led by Taryn Balwinski and Brian Otten and a host of volunteers. It really typifies Chattanooga's artistic, creative spirit. And just in so many ways, it really is what Chattanooga is all about. And that's why I love being part of it.
It's been around here for only a few years, and you got involved very early on. How have you seen it change in just a short span of time?
Well, in 2016, I had just moved here and was looking for opportunities to get out, and saw this advertised as a day-long free music event. So I attended and enjoyed and made good friends there. It's just a really memorable experience for me. And then I met Taryn a few months later and got invited to be on the volunteer group. The first 2 years, I led up a project called Music on the Move, involving a number of musicians playing at various places around the city. And then I got into the harmonica workshop, which I do now.
And that brings us to all of the activities. This is not only an opportunity for participation, but Chrissy, it's an opportunity, as Mark was just saying, for people to learn.
The library has been involved with Make Music Day since it started in 2016, but this is actually the first year that we are going to have it at four different library locations, four different branches. So we're really, really excited. And we also have events sprinkled throughout the entire day for all ages. So we have our music and movement class that are going to be for the littles and their parents. But we also are going to have DIY instrument take and make kits. You can do the kit at home or you can do it at the branch with some library staff. We're also going to have a mobile beat lab that's going to be up on our fourth floor. Or at Eastgate, we'll have those set up. Super exciting. We will also have we're so excited about this. It's our instrument lending library. It's the kickoff to this amazing thing that we have created with CGR and Lyndhurst. So it's going to be a full instrument lending library for ages 10 to 17. You can check out one instrument per library card, and you can have it for 2 weeks. You can renew it once and you can make music with this new instrument lending library. We're so excited about it.
And this is just another example of opportunities for people to get out and to, after the past year plus that we have all experienced with this pandemic, and for many people, for so many people, music has been such a balm.
Sure.
That is definitely very true. We've had people throughout the quarantine time calling us and emailing us trying to get back into our recording studio just as a way to express and create. And that was one of the very first places that we started taking appointments because we saw such a demand for it. So we're really excited to be able to have people back in the building.
And even though requirements have been lifted as people have gotten vaccinated, are you still handling anything differently?
With our studio space, it's still appointment only. We keep that the same and kept that the same throughout the pandemic and the quarantine times. We do take a little pause in between the studio appointments and do a great sanitization, especially, you know, you've got microphones in there. And so we were all kind of trained on how to properly take apart the microphones and sanitize them. So that was something that I had never learned how to do before. So that was interesting. And we've continued that. So just extra precautions.
In 2020, Make Music Day was entirely online. So we adapted a year ago. Even this time, most of our events are all outside, so you're dealing with fresh air circulation.
How does the day begin?
We start at 8:30 in the morning with an event called Stones, Water, Time, and Breath. Ray Zimmerman, a local nature poet, is going to lead that. It's out at the Chickamauga Dam. It's not below the dam, but it's above at the little public beach area. It's a very fascinating project that makes percussive sounds with stones tossed into the water. And it's very experimental and kind of meditative. So it'll be a really interesting, quiet morning out there along the beach. Ray will direct people that, as a group, people will toss their stones into the water in a certain pattern.
Tell us how the day comes to an end.
At the end of the day, we have events at Coolidge Park and the Chattanooga Choo Choo. There's a summer solstice jam over at Coolidge Park. And at the Choo Choo, we have an electric guitar parade. And register for that online. It's going to be a lot of fun marching with our electric guitars and percussion up and down Main Street.
And for more information, where can people go online?
The Facebook Make Music CHA, Make Music CHA. On that page, you'll find an events listing.
All right. Mark, Chrissy, thanks so much.
Can't wait to see you.
Napoleon Donut Williams, Chattanooga's first African-American police detective, is the next guest on the A-List with Allison Leibovitz tonight at 8:30 p.m. on WTCI PBS.
So when did you know you wanted to go into law enforcement?
Oh, God. That's a funny thing. A lot of people don't ask me that. Thank you. Right down Long Street where I was born, it was a grocery store on that corner. This police, a white policeman, would come by at least twice a week, especially on Saturday. But go in and get him a Coca-Cola. My job was, I lived next door. My job was to take the drinks and put them in that cart, like double colas. See, you don't remember double cola.
I remember double cola.
The knee-highs and all that.
Grape knee-high was my favorite drink. My grandfather, he ran a bar down in Montgomery, Alabama, and that's it. Grape knee-high was everything I drank.
So you put the drink bottles in the right case, double colas, Coca-Cola. That was my job. And that guy owned the store would always give me, I live next door, and they called me Poli. That's what he called me. I don't know how I got that name. But this policeman, he called me Poli. So I would walk him out to the car. I guess I was about 8 or 9 years old. And one day he cut the siren on for me. I never forgot that.
Watch the full conversation on the A-List with Allison Leibovitz tonight at 8:30 p.m. on WTCI PBS. This month, the Nightfall Concert Series in downtown Chattanooga is showcasing and supporting local artists. On stage tomorrow night, Emily Kate Boyd.
Oh, your first move was so tender like a fiddlehead fern. Laugh, yeah, holding a smile. All drunk on a feeling and carelessly weaving your delicate story to mine. They say love is an art, not a right or wrong answer. And face at the side of routine. So we conjured adventures and we hung from rafters and tread lightly on each other's dreams, singing the bottle, spoons and knives. Make a joyful noise and bring the family back to life. Let's have a kitchen conversation, baby. Eat love, eat love and play nice. We'll be right back.
band, Ben Van Winkle and the Figment.
Between there and then, I stumble through life, one choice at a time. Every outcome existing, but to them I'm blind. Am I one of many possibilities? My path most important, my reality.
Catch this week's Nightfall tomorrow night, starting at 7 p.m. at Miller Park and Miller Plaza. You're listening to Scenic Roots on WUTC. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.